Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic Effects. It's a pleasure to have you join us for the next hour. And whether it's your first time or you've been with us before, we share ideas and exchange and try and provide a context for this whole process, this theory. That we've been handed this notion of Freemasonry, all of the principles, the ideals. Mm. When you think about it, the ideals, accepting a belief in ideals, determines that we are by comparison in an inferior position. We have. Freemasonry is delightful without saying it. It offers us something audacious. We strive, and it tells us not, it doesn't make us or compel us. It describes what a decent human being would be like if they did certain things. It doesn't say that. Never says this is the only path. Never does that, does it? It has over the centuries stood well to the great minds. And it's not to say that great minds are lesser because they are not Freemasons. Certainly not. There are and have always been people of significance around us, generally not recognized or appreciated, particularly if they're women, true genius. And we've reached a point, mankind has, humanity has, of realizing the depth of understanding, realizing that we are more sophisticated. Although the cynics are always, there's always room for a cynic in the crowd, and that never stops. And there's always a strong argument made by the skeptics that never stops. And where we find it more fascinating is this. Search for a more meditative focused state of mind. Not by everybody. when you're moving down the street in earnest to get to an appointment, the practice of a meditative state is still within you. It is, but it's useful when it's needed, and you decide, you alone. Some will practice an entire life, and are in a constant state of presence. Others seem to use it as initially as a quick fix commodity. Here, we'll use it because I'm having some difficulty. I need some solution, and this is it. So, bring the connection without the work. I'm going to be able to play Chopin, not because I'm going to practice it, or I'm going to have my piano tuned, but because I can tune it in on Spotify or one of the other streaming services. And in a way, you know, you're thinking philosophically this day, yeah, you are playing that music, but play the music in your head. Huh? Playing the presence of mind in your head. And nobody else knows. What happens when you have that that smile, that inner smile, that satisfaction? Not because anybody's going to make you do it, my goodness. Not because you're a commodity, but because this has this very interesting effect that you only learn. You can be told about it, but if you begin freely to practice it, the results are often surprising. Funny we are. Funny little creatures who... We want absolutism, but we can't really handle the gaps in religious thinking, can we? No, but we like that absolute. I want permanence. I want to be able to predict the future with a great deal of certainty. But, you know, you've all seen that the yin and yang swirl, and you notice the black dot in the center of it, chaos. Yin and yang, the balance, there's always, is it the invictive? Chaos always enters. Not that we've done anything wrong. It's nature. It's natural. Ah, there. It's natural that we have whether you see it as a constant threat, I don't know. It's like saying a rainstorm is a constant threat. Well, yeah, in my mind, I can explain to you when a rainstorm would be a threat, but that's not what I mean, is it? It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying generally, a little heat, a little light, a little water, we have growth. It's proportionate, eh? So we enjoy and appreciate it. The portions, the balance for what it is, knowing that it's going to change always. I find a particular season where the colors of the leaves emerging in the trees just reaches this range of green that is that darkens as the seasons go by. It's just so wonderful, but it doesn't last. And that's it's like that that when I taste a glass of Riesling, and I'm not sure, you know, it could be dry, it could be very sweet, it could be semi-sweet. The Riesling grape does that. But the pleasure, and I don't want that, you know, I don't want that every moment of every day. Don't be ridiculous. It is what it is. It's wonderful. And so I have that sense of surprise, don't you? With the next bottle, it's like, well, of course, you know, I know what that flavor is like. And I know it goes with this kind of conversation. And yet, I don't. I don't have mastery. Sometimes I would like to help people that are sitting on the edge of their seat with an attitude of umbrage constant. Well, you can certainly if people, I have my critics, you probably do. I can't do much except to demonstrate that if they're saying something that's a falsehood, then they're not likely to be able to change that belief, but I can live the life that I live and let the viewer determine whether the person is accurate in their assumptions about me. The falsehoods, well, judge for yourself. We have a good program today. If virtue is what we seek, that's not the qualifier, that's the commentary today. And we have the work of, I'm going to share with you the work of Tennyson. Why Tennyson today? Well, I was reading about John Stuart Mill, you know, that 19th century English philosopher, very, very smart guy. And he was referred to as a utilitarian and a naturalist. And he explores the consequences of the ongoing empiricist outlook. But he was perhaps one of the most staunch readers of Tennyson's work. Tennyson is no withering flower in his own right. So that prompted me to look at Tennyson's work, look into Tennyson's work again, and I picked one of his interesting pieces, Tithonus, and it's about a marriage, if you will. It's legend. I think it's an eye-opener. It's that it reveals something that I think we can relate to in our own life about our own partners or best friends and contacts around us and what they mean. The inclination is that nature, you and I being natural, part of nature and part of the natural character of the world, will be reminded of the importance of, the importance of an Epicurean kind of a life, where you appreciate the delicacy of life and the need to take care of yourself in a way, to satisfy your yearnings in a way that benefits the truth, that benefits your community, that is wholesome. Even now, we are seeing these ideas of celebrity and wealth are being reexamined. The philosophers were ahead of that, and the Sufi and the deeply devout were ahead of this, talking about hubris and greed, money changers. Today, our little cell phones, these bits of memory that we can hold in our hand, are providing us with insights that are expansive. And then we're connecting. And we're asking hard questions. You would think almost that they were writers of Masonic ritual. Mm. The hard questions, where did all this enormous wealth, where did the oligarchs' wealth come from? Well, we know. And then we scratch our heads and wonder, is that really what we are? We support this process that is exploitive Oh, my goodness. And how do we mean that, right? Yeah. What am I exploiting to enjoy a steak or to cut logs for the fire? How do we balance it all off? 7.8 billion of us? We're going to need things that we can believe in commonly. Even now, we're aware of the massive manipulation. It's like you and I, the way we trust a person is different when they're trying to sell us something, whether it's an idea or a commodity, of course, than when you're talking with somebody about validation. You know? It's more interesting. So before you listen to this program, I often think that I would like you, I'll be speaking out of turn here, I'm sure, and I apologize for that. But I would like us all to be reflective, be in a reflective state of mind, whether you do that through music or sitting back with a coffee and a cigarette or reading your paper or looking at the sunrise or sunset. And then judge this work very harshly. My goodness, your time is important. And the quality of our conversation should reflect that that dignity. Eh? The music today, I think you're going to be able to relax and follow all of this as we tend to do. My goodness, before I forget, thank you and welcome to listeners from Denmark. I know we've had people in the past, but it's nice to see you pop up on the statistics or on world maps. And thank you. And to others who are Spanish listeners from Spain and Croatia and Serbia and Greece, thank you. It's inspiring to know the serious-minded amongst you have found some value in what we're doing here, and that's great. That's a validation right there. I just generalize we've had listeners from Australia for quite a long time, haven't we? And I always think of the study of Freemasonry there. Think that I want to maybe project that it's serious-minded and that there's an element of scholarship in all of you, and that I wish that we could have a more direct kind of an exchange so that the topics would be a little different. But in the meantime, we are random travelers, and we're sitting together in this train. And the train's going through the steps. And where Russian is spoken, or Slav dialects are spoken, we're looking out the window mile after mile after mile, hearing the clatter, seeing the world go by. And you sit down across from me. And after a greeting and perhaps a cup of coffee together, we begin talking. And since we're going to be together, the trip is going to be days and days. We have that exchange, that frankness that, you know, that happens between strangers. Hoping that there's a bit of chaos, there's something a little different and out of routine in the conversation that leads us to new understanding. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to be with you. Here, I'll show you. This is a lovely piece of piano work. I hope you agree. The man spent his life, you know, being absorbed by the music, feeling it, huh? It's like, oh, Beautiful. If virtue is what we seek. Let me say before I begin that the nature of Freemasonry is not always visible. It's like being unable to see the forest for the trees. It's like measuring what's happening to us in our environment, collecting the observations of the climate. The climate changes so readily, doesn't it? Where I am, particularly, other parts of the world, they have a great deal of stability. The weather changes. The weather changes constantly. Sorry, the climate is the accumulation of all those observations. So when we start to compare and use our observations, we see things that are troubling. In my experience, it wasn't the scientists that first taught me about this. It was farmers, growers, my old relatives that talked with me about water and air and the soil, and they were quite concerned. As I think it was a time before it was a business. It was when growing things was what you did. If virtue is what we seek, whether an idea is valuable or corrosive, the ideas that require least effort are those that erode individual well-being. I guess that's a dressed-up way of saying it takes little effort to be stupid and a great deal of effort to do it, live it right. By extension, the ideas we take in shape, that shape the communities in which we live, the ideas that we take in shape the communities in which we live. We don't dress to make ourselves virtuous. We don't rub shoulders with celebrity thinking that will render us meritorious. Isn't it a shame that we can't talk about why science and art were our dutiful core studies? We should one day, don't you think? While both rest on individuals asking the impossible, unimaginable questions, our curriculum will require courses that bring us to a state of curiosity that always penetrates what is familiar, in a sense, replacing what is with what could be. You see that with the architects and engineers and mechanics, moving forward, the fix. How we employ that idea rests in your hands. Knowing your innovations cannot be arrested, can't be stopped. Does this not tell us creativity requires conviction, at least in the sense of validation? I don't think it's just happenstance. And does it not tell us that the world will be impacted? In a sense, it does. We share when we find something worthwhile. I'm not talking about the greed, the need for profit at the expense of other people. No, I'm not here. What if rather than pulling out self-defeating thoughts, we were accompanied by the realization your notions could also open doors to further understanding? What if instead of the self-defeating, it's like, where could you go next? Where do we take this next? While all this might be plausible, none of it matters until a man, person, grasps the meaning of being judged by merit in his own mind and prepared to face the vicissitudes of the marketplace, where at his most vulnerable, he will learn to cope with his critics. I'm not inclined to think that a virtuous life is a life detached from reality. Ignore what you don't like. Embracing it all for what it is and says, that requires patience. The anxiety is made into excitement. It is the anxiety that allows the soprano to perform and glory in the audience reaction, the poet to reveal the soul of living, unlocking the human condition for us. Oh, who are they to do that? Even attempting to live a virtuous life is an approximation. When is the effort ever done? Will it all be a bowl of cherries? Will the heavens sing our praise? Or will we find that objective, evasive satisfaction? When you get to the end of the path, then there is an end of the path, I guess, is there? What do you hope to find about you, about life, about your connection? What is it that somehow you're swayed by praise or you're a little flattery? Flattery's nice, but is it true? Are you the result of all the flattery? Or are you the result of what you tell yourself you are? If only we didn't have that concept of ego. All about me, self, self, self. So, let me leave off with just a question about the nature of, what do you think the nature of humanity is, the nature of mankind is? I'm inclined to think, I did think for the longest time that the resting point was depression, sadness. And then that evolved and I began to think that it was anxiety, fear of the unknown in a sense. But for what it's worth, I dismiss that. Only because there's so much overwhelming evidence that our fundamental nature is curiosity. Addressing the unknown. We're fascinating that way. We tell ourselves we like things predictable, and we do. But we're always picking up that rock. We're that little boy picking it up at the bottom of the stream to see what's living under there. What's under there? Curiosity. And thank you to all the mathematicians who put notes on the pages and created these beautiful instruments and here, modern jazz quartet. Thank you. What if we were able to live forever? What if we were ever able to live forever? The poem I'm about to share with you, Tithonus, is by Alfred Lord Tennyson. And as I said earlier, he was a captured the imagination of John Stuart Mill, the philosopher. Now, he was born, he had a hard time. A lot of the minds of that period did, didn't they? He was the fourth of 12 kids, and his dad was a rector. And he was sent with his brothers Frederick and Charles to a grammar school, but he wasn't very happy. He was going to stay there 5 years. And things were not going well at home. But his dad did manage to give him a very broad literary education. Now, it turns out that Alfred was a precocious little bugger. And before he was a teenager, he was writing. Can you imagine? He's writing in the style, not writing poetry, just blank verse, but he's writing in the styles of Alexander Pope. Yeah, that one. Sir Walter Scott and John Milton. So he wasn't yet expressing the things that we, the work that we, in adulthood, we hold up as and revere. But he was intelligent enough to know that the influences most worthy of would be the work of the finest minds. Not all of them, my goodness, but to select from the finest and adapt their style, what would that do to your thinking? It's like if you're adapting to, when I see a performer playing a Bach, and they're telling us about the construction of the passages, the phrasing. In other words, Bach is connecting and communicating with them quite readily, and then we get the beautiful, that fanciful notion of shaping the note, shaping the emotion. In other words, the performer adds something, that je ne sais quoi, they add to the performance. And we stand and applaud wildly. This is the kind of person that we're talking about here with this kid, lonely rectory, thrown out on their own, basically, the kids. And yet something happened. And, of course, you know, life being short. But the work here today is that I'm going to share with you. I'll give you a short summary so that you can look for it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's quite a long piece, but I'll just go through the first passage and the last. You can connect the dots as you see fit. But the story is about the woods. And, you know, you've been in the woods and the experience of being in the woods. And if you've ever had the pleasure of being in the woods alone, The woods and the forests, as it says, grow old and their leaves fall to the ground. Man is born, works the earth, and then dies and is buried underground. So, you know, you're finding parallels, all things including us. Yet the speaker, Tithonus, is cursed to live forever. Tithonus tells Aurora, the goddess of the dawn, that he grows old slowly in her arms like a white-haired shadow. Tithonus in Greek legend is the son of Leomedon, the king of Troy, and Strymo, daughter of the river Scamander. Eros fell in love with Tithonus and took him to Ethiopia, where she bore two children, Amathion and Memnon. And according to the Homeric hymn of Aphrodite, Eros asks Zeus to grant Tithonus eternal life, and the god consented. But Eos, forgot to ask also for eternal youth. So her husband grew old and withered. And in a later version, Tithonus was transformed into a cicada. By the way, Aurora granted his wish gently, give me immortality. Aurora granted it like a rich philanthropist. And and it goes something like this. The woods decay and fall. The vapors weep their burden to the ground. Man comes and tills the field and lies beneath. And after many a summer dies the swan, me only cruel immortality consumes. I wither slowly in thine arms. Here at the quiet limit of the world, a white-haired shadow roaming like a dream that ever silent spaces of the east, far-folded mists and gleaming halls of morn. Gray shadow once a man, glorious in his beauty and thy choice, who mad'st him thy chosen, that he seemed his great heart none other than God. I asked thee, give me immortality. Then didst thou grant mine, asking with a smile, like wealthy men who care not how they give, but thy strong hours indignant work their wills, and beat me down and marred and wasted me, and though they could not end me, left me maimed to dwell in presence of immortal youth. Immortal youth besides immortal youth, and all I was in ashes. Can thy love, thy beauty make amends, though even now close over us the silver star of thy guide shines on those tremulous eyes that fill with tears? To hear me, let me go. Take back thy gift. Why should a man desire in any way to vary from the kindly race of men or pass beyond the goal of ordinance where all should pause, as is most meet for all? Yet hold me not forever in thine east. How can my nature longer mix with thine? Coldly thy rosy shadows bathe me. Cold are all thy lights, and cold my wrinkled feet upon thy glimmering thresholds, where the steam floats up from the dim fields about the homes of happy men that have the power to die, and grassy burrows of the happier dead. Release me and restore me to the ground. Thou seest all, thou wilt see my grave. Thou wilt renew thy beauty morn by morn. I, earth in earth, forget these empty courts. And thee, returning on thy silver wheels. If only Eos had asked for eternal youth along with immortality. Who knew? Mm-hmm. I love the old jazz. That's from 1936, Coleman Hawkins. I want to share with you a bit of history, as we tend to do this time of the program. It's funny, some of the ideas that occur to me. Masonry is in a constant process of evolution. We constantly evolve. And where I am, we're asking hard questions. They're, you know, it's not whether we avoid them. They are what they are. It's like, you know, pretending that, you know, that it matters that we refute science or the arts. It doesn't matter. The arts and sciences are what they are. Are we literate? Are we ignorant of what's going on around us? That's a different matter. And the self-consciousness that drives that, it's not for us to present. A gentleman wouldn't ask those types of questions. What happens around us presents us with questions of relevance, always. Are we relevant today? That's the axiomatic question here, I believe. And in some places around the world, yeah, you answer for yourself, of course, but just like you will have opinions about where I am, I have opinions about where you are and the practices. The questions today are as vital as ever, the questions about purpose. And so we go, and so we dig into our material. We have a different kind of a challenge than our ancients did, much different. Um, knowing that we have changed, knowing that we have made progress, wonderful progress. It's what we want our children to do, to progress, to live a life with a greater satisfaction than us, to stand on the shoulders of giants and be who they are. Science, move forward, to be able to satisfy their life, with fulfill it with works of art that trigger that satisfying depth of thought. Here's what I mean in a different context. This is going back to the day. This just tells us what our nature was. We're sending ships into space made of titanium. Now this is to the iron what titanium is to space. This is Masonic literature, and we're going to let a little bit of reality sink in here. It extols the status quo, singing the praises of fraternity, conviviality, and mutual benevolence. All of these things encourage virtue. And yet, you know, it becomes hollowed out after a while. Is that all there is? Well, that's tedium. That's the boredom. We need Camus to help us sit down and talk to us about what that part of life is about. Orders then went on rather contradictorily. Oh my goodness, contradiction within masonry, to allude frequently to the large number of gentlemen and aristocrats, even kings, who proudly shared in the Masonic mysteries. This sharing of values should occur only in privacy and secrecy. What are you doing telling? Emphasis should also be placed within the lodges on the liberal arts and sciences, particularly geometry, which improve and civilize mankind. Don't be thinking that geometry is lines and angles. My goodness, look at the definitions. Look at how redefined the term geometry to include all of masonry. Uniformly, the writers claim to represent an ancient, generally Egyptian and Hermetic wisdom, rediscovered and augmented by the new useful learning of their age. They had new useful learning in that age, just like we do today. With supreme optimism, Freemasons always find knowledge to be beneficial and progressive. Yes, and you'll have jaw-dropping moments when you ask about the vaccine. How many people are rejecting it in your lodge? What has happened? The lodges eschew bigotry and superstition, yet they take care to exclude those whom Masonic literature and ritual describe as the profane. And while also excluding women, the English Freemason, although increasingly less committed to sexual exclusivity in the lodge as the centuries wears on, glories in the joys of family and domestic life. On the pleasures of social harmony, Masonic rhetoric could embrace as its model the universe proclaimed by Newtonian science. In 1779, for example, the Kent vicar and Freemason James Smith, preaching before his lodge, employed language drawn from the Newtonian tradition to illustrate the necessity and power of benevolence. End quote. Attraction binds the universe as benevolence binds men, he confidently asserted. In similar language and in the same period, Daniel Turner, an Anglican minister in Norwich, urged his brothers to practice philanthropy, which is not confined to name or sect. Like the power of attraction, which reaches from the largest to the smallest bodies in the universe, it unites men from the throne to the cottage. The early Newtonians laid great emphasis upon order, stability, and the rule of law. See parallels. You find them too. No, that's something you have to do within your own frame of reference, yeah? Some things are more obvious to one than it is to the other. Thinking that, you know, we're talking about Newton, we're talking about Darwin. When we talk about architects, we're talking about Wren. We're not talking about people that were plying their trade. We're talking about people that defined a way of thinking. Well, if we're going to pick role models and inspiration, gentlemen, I think we've decided we're going to pick the best. The hell with this sense of mediocrity. We understand merit. We do. We understand the merit has something to do with legacy, something to do with redefinition, not what I want today, short-lived, to be replaced tomorrow, but something that endures. Here. This is a bit of Coltrane called Wise One. We have to wrap up again for today. I'd like it to go on a little bit longer, but it's like anything. A good meal comes to an end and we move on with the next most important thing we need to do on our, in our day. Masonry doesn't really tell us. It reveals things that tell us. It helps us to grow when we need it. It becomes important when we appreciate it. Bathing ourselves in the notions of the arts and sciences there's not a uniformity to that kind of thinking, except there's a uniformity to that kind of thinking. And then you have to wonder what effect, if you're listening to beautiful things, if you're listening to the beauty of poetry and you're struggling, you get over that initial barrier and you start to realize the connection. And talking about the soul of the world, and you bathe yourself in your mind in that, and the music, help yourself evolve in different stages through the music and develop an appreciation for things that stretch you beyond your experience. Then ask the question, now, why would you do that? Why would you bother? Well, very few people would, huh? Right. Except you. I look forward to being with you again soon, and thanks for joining us. I hope you've been educational and informative. Commit those acts of Masonic kindness, all the random stuff. Ciao, Bella. Thank you.